yesterday and spent a little extra time on the first section, and now we're up of the next to last, the first section of the next to last section of the first text. So right now we're on page 11. Excuse me, we're on page 11. The last thing I think we read was that quote by from Chaitanya Charitamrita right in the middle of the page. Jivarada lasse ye iti utidhaya shishnodhara para yana krishna nahi pai. That person who runs here and there seeking to gratify his palate and who is always attached to the desires of his stomach and genitals is unable to attain Krishna. As stated before, the tongue, belly, and genitals are all situated in a straight line, and they fall in the same category. Lord Chaitanya has said, Bala na kaibe, ora bala na paribe. Do not dress luxuriously, and do not eat delicious foodstuffs. If one can be simple in these two ways, he'll avoid so much trouble. Because if one dresses simply, that means he's going to care less what people are thinking about how he looks. Now, of course, for preaching purposes, we can't be slovenly or sloppy. But as far as our own tastes are concerned, we should be simple. We don't want to impress people by our dress. Although, when Prabhupada instructed us to preach in Japan way back in 1969, he told the devotees that they should dress in silk and that they should always wear flower garlands. And in this way, they would attract the minds of the Japanese people. But that was for preaching. And when one starts thinking, I want to look nice so that everyone thinks, that other people think how nice I look, one will become proud. And that is actually a symptom of his pride. And if we look at pictures of Prabhupada, especially in the earlier days, we can see that Prabhupada actually wasn't so interested in being a fancy dresser. Clean, yes. Fancy? No. Later on, the devotees took better care of him and bought him fine silk and studded buttons and fancy sweaters. But Prabhupada was unattached completely to these things, as he was unattached. Once, there are two stories that come to mind. That once Prabhupada had just come from England and he landed in New York. I don't remember the exact year, but it was somewhere in the early 70s. And while he was in England, he was given a very, very luxurious cashmere sweater that was very expensive. And then one devotee came when Prabhupada arrived in New York, and he gave Prabhupada a new sweater that he had just gotten from his parents. It was new, but it wasn't an expensive sweater. And when that devotee offered that to Prabhupada with love, Prabhupada immediately took off his expensive cashmere sweater and gave it to the devotee as an exchange of love. Because Prabhupada wasn't attached. What is the use of being attached to these things? They are not us. We all know from experience that they don't bring us happiness. They're external. And what does bring us happiness is the internal. When the heart is filled with affection for Krishna and his devotees, then we feel happy. But the dressings of a dead body, and this body is not alive, it is dead, that cannot bring happiness to us. Nor can the feeding the tongue or the belly, or trying to squeeze enjoyment from the genitals. There's no happiness, true happiness in these things. Actually, only frustration and anger exist in these things. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajaguno samudbhava, mahashano, mahapadma, vidyena miyavarina. That these desires are born out of rajaguna. And because just as jiva vega, manasa krodha vega, because they do not satisfy us, then comes krodha. Kama esha, krodha esha, because when the desires must not be satisfied, they cannot be satisfied on the material platform, therefore anger comes. Anger at the people who made the promises, and anger at ourselves due to frustration. So therefore the advice of Mahaprabhu, more material things. And one depends on Krishna. And secondly, these two atyahara and prayasas, they take time, unlimited time, because one's desires are like a fire. The more fuel that is fed to the fire, simply the bigger it becomes. So similarly, the more one attempts to satisfy his kama, his desires, then his desires just simply increase unlimitedly. And because they become frustrated, they go from raja to tama. They turn into krodha, or anger, frustrated anger. So one shouldn't use his time in this way to collect so much, to over-endeavor so much, just to maintain this body which is doomed. To put all one's time into something that is must be doomed is foolish. Obviously, it's idiotic. If you put all your energy into something that you know you must lose, it doesn't show much intelligence. Especially, one should understand that he's a soul. And when one understands that he's a soul, he should put his energy into understanding deeply that he's a soul, and what are the activities of the soul, and what is the ecstasy of the soul. That is Chaitanya Charitamrita, the activities of the soul within the immortal atmosphere. So that is actually prayasas, the proper endeavor for the living entity. And he should, although he must use his time to keep his body and soul together, he should not over-endeavor in this regard. So that's basically what we spoke about yesterday. Today, in text, in the third section, in section C, Prabhupada begins by discussing prajalpa. Atyahara prayasascha prajalpo. What's the next one after prajalpo?
Niyamagraha.
What does niyamagraha mean?
Following the rules and regulations just for the sake of following them, or not following them at all.
And we'll hear more about that. Janasangas chaloyam cha. What is janasangas?
Association with materialists.
Association with materialists. Loyam?
Greed.
Greed. So all these things, if we'll notice, they're all interconnected. By associating with materialists, one becomes greedy, and then one, because one is talking prajalpa with them, just about mundane things, then one becomes greedy for the things that they have and we don't have, and we begin to dream that we can have so much more, and then prayasas, over-endeavor, and following the niyamagraha, following the rules and regulations meant for economic development, and rejecting those that are austerely meant to control the senses, and over-collecting atyahara. So they all, practically speaking, stem from janasangas. And sarusanga, all good things result from that. So now we'll speak about prajalpa. Another impediment is prajalpa, unnecessarily talking. When we mix with a few friends, we immediately begin
unnecessarily talking, sounding just like croaking toads. If we must talk, we should talk about the Krishna consciousness movement. Those outside of the Krishna consciousness movement are interested in reading heaps of newspapers, magazines, and novels, solving crossword puzzles, and doing many other nonsensical things. This book was written, I think, by Prabhupada in 1974, published in 1975. And by this time, Prabhupada had a full grasp of the Western culture and what it meant. And so much of what it means is to waste time with nonsensical things. And one of the prime methods of wasting time is reading unnecessary, useless newspapers, and especially if one rides the New York subway system, one sees people solving crossword puzzles continuously. And if you think about it, it's the most absurd thing. It's nothing more than just filling in the gap between birth and death. And as if there is no purpose to life, and no one ever thinks like that. Just writing in words that have no connection to anything, in little boxes. So it's foolish, and they invent so many other little books of foolish word puzzles, and it's just foolish, and newspapers, and this and that. In this fashion, people simply waste their valuable time and energy. And this goes from boyhood to youth to old age. Prahlad Maharaj explains this very clearly in his teachings to his school friends, explaining that youth is the time to actually take to Krishna consciousness, when one has his life ahead of them. Even in old age, Prabhupada explains, the Western country's old men retired from active life. What do they do? It's the last few years of their life. They're going to die. They're going to take another body based on their consciousness at the time of death. They don't know that, but that's what will happen. So naturally, if they had some good association, they would be preparing in somewhat a fearful way, if nothing else, for their next life. And in previous times, when people got old, even 20, 30 years ago, people naturally would get religious when they got old, because they became frightened, because they couldn't avoid thinking that they are next, because their grandfather has died, their father has died, their uncle has died, their older brother has died, their sister's best friend has died, and they're just waiting in line, thinking, I'm next. But instead of thinking, I'm next, and becoming fearful, and therefore acting intelligently, and beginning to pray like anything, even though motivated out of the fear, people take the attitudes of a goat going to the slaughterhouse. When they bring goats to the slaughterhouse, they first put the herd of goats in a corral. And that corral is right next to the building. And that building is where the goats are killed. And there's one little door from the corral into the building. And there's one goat who's trained, and he's called the Judas goat. He has a little bell around his neck. And he walks through that door, and all the other goats follow him. And they line the goats up, and they take the first goat, and they put his head on the wooden chopping block, and they take an axe, and they chop his head off. And the goat behind him is thinking, Whew, that was close. So that foolish, insane attitude is the attitude of the old people today. They live together in communities of old people in the West, and one by one they see their neighbors and friends and relatives die. And they think, phew, that was close. And they keep on playing cards, swimming, watching television, being armchair political philosophers, talking about this government and the last government and what it was like and the price of coffee, tea, and eggs and bread when they were children. And in this way, they waste their lives and they march unknowingly to death. And this, Prabhupada said, is considered prajalpa. All these activities, from boyhood to youth to old age, that waste our time through unnecessarily talking. Intelligent persons, now this is very important, although we may think that this is meant for others. Intelligent persons interested in Krishna consciousness should never take part in such activities, meaning prajalpa. Next, Janasangha refers to associating with persons not interested in Krishna consciousness. Haranyakashipu has stated, and of course we generally don't listen to the advice of Haranyakashipu, but in this case we do. He has told his son Prahlad that the heart is like a crystal. And what is the nature of a crystal? Whatever you place near it, it takes on that color, it appears to be that color. So the crystal of our heart, when associating with non-devotees, takes on the qualities of non-devotees. And when the crystal of our heart, when associating with devotees, takes on devotional characteristics. So therefore, Chaitanya Charitamrita said, or Mahaprabhu himself said, when asked what is the quality, what is the characteristic of a Vaishnava, his answer was asat sanga tyaga, a Vaishnava char. The achar, or the activity of a Vaishnava, is asat sanga tyag. What does tyaga mean?
Give up.
And what does he give up? Asat sanga, association with those who are asat, when people not interested in spiritual life. Prabhupada was once asked, in Melbourne in 1974, how can I become sincere? And Prabhupada's answer was, how can you become a drunkard? You associate with drunkards if you want to become a drunkard, and if you want to become sincere, associate with sincere devotees. So, Srila Narottama Das Thakur has therefore advised us to live only in the association of Krishna conscious devotees, Bhakta Sannivas. Tandiyara charana sevi bhakta sanivas janame hoy e avilas. My only desire is to live in the association of devotees, says Narottama Das Thakur. Tandiyara charana sevi bhakta sanivas janame hoy. Birth after birth, this is my desire. One should always engage in the service of the Lord and the association of the Lord's devotees, and engage in the Lord's service. And Prabhupada, also in Melbourne, I think it was in 75, Prabhupada was gave the example, and Prabhupada gives it here too, that about what is the benefit of living in the temple. It is not that one can't be Krishna conscious if one doesn't live in the temple, just like one doesn't need to be a member of the stock exchange to become a successful businessman. But if one wants to become a successful businessman, if he's a member of the stock exchange, it makes it easy, because his association is all connected with business. So similarly, in a temple, there should be nothing that goes on except the service of Krishna. And if that's the case, then those who live in the temple will naturally make advancement because they'll be associating with people only serving Krishna.
And Prabhupada even says, we have established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to give people an opportunity to associate with those who have not forgotten Krishna.
So this is the great responsibility of the devotees, to be those who are worthy of being associated with, and to be that association that uplifts others who come to visit us in the temple, who come to see the deity. And then when they come to see the deity, they're offered nice prasadam and offer the opportunity to associate with the devotees and to render service.
Next, Prabhupada explains Atyahara again. He speaks more about Atyahara. What does Atyahara mean again? What type of ahara is an Atyahara?
Collecting, eating more than necessary, more than one needs.
Again, it takes time and it inhibits one's dependence upon Krishna, and in the form of eating, it agitates the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. We also notice the overlapping between prajalpo and vachovegam. In controlling the vachovegam, the pushing of speech, means eliminating prajalpa and only talking about Krishna, or as Prabhupada said, the Krishna consciousness movement. If one likes to gossip, there's plenty to gossip about in the Krishna consciousness movement. And at least, maybe, if you don't do it too offensively, that will connect you gradually to Krishna. Gossip means, and you know what he said? And I told him, and she told me. That's the French word for it? What is it?
Bavardage.
It sounds quite Sanskrit.
It sounds like something birds do in trees in the morning.
But nothing ever gets accomplished. No one learns anything. No one has their heart satisfied. It's also, there's a Chanakya sloka that Prabhupada used to quote that in regard to either over-collecting or prajalpa, that Chanakya Pandit said that one moment of time lost cannot be bought back with hundreds of pounds of gold. Something to that effect. Now more on Atyahara. Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur writes in his Anuvritti that too much endeavor to acquire knowledge on the part of mental speculators or dry philosophers falls in the category of Atyahara. So collecting doesn't only mean money or rice and grains, but it also means unnecessary knowledge that doesn't help us become Krishna conscious. So much philosophical speculation and economic development, these are all trying to gain this knowledge, is also in the category of Atyahara. And also no desire for Krishna consciousness but possessing more and more material things, scientific knowledge, monetary gain, these are all under Atyahara. Now Prabhupada makes an interesting point, and those who are taking the writing course should note this point. Now, Prabhupada explains that karmis labor to acquire more and more money for future generations only because they do not know their future position. Interested only in getting more and more money for their sons and grandsons, such foolish persons do not even know what their position is going to be in the next life. There are many incidents that illustrate this point. Now, when one makes a philosophical statement, the general rule is to follow it with shastra, some scriptural quote to back it up, or some logic, or an example. So examples or stories, they can make a philosophical point very clear. So
this is very common for a materialist to think like this, that I want to get money and collect, because he only needs how many chapatis can a man eat in a day? So no one needs more than 5, 10, 15, 20 rupees or $5 worth of food a day, and he needs a place to live, and he needs some clothing, and maybe some vehicle for transportation, and some soft bed to lie in. So someone needs some amount of sense gratification and comfort. But even after having accumulated these things, people just work and work and work and work and work to accumulate more, and the rationale is to do something wonderful for my children and their children and future generations. But the flaw in this type of charity is exposed in the story that Prabhupada tells. They don't know, he says, what is their position is going to be in their next life. So therefore, Prabhupada tells of a great kami accumulated a vast fortune for his sons and grandsons. But later, according to his karma, he took his birth in a cobbler's house located near the building in which in his previous life he constructed for his children. It so happened, when this very cobbler came to his former house, his former sons and grandsons beat him with shoes. So you can imagine how ironic that situation is. This man had slaved, worked his whole life, committed unlimited sins to bequeath his family and relatives a big, beautiful house and so much money so that they could live comfortably. And he, due to his sinful activities, became a meager muchi, a cobbler. And then one day, the cobbler knocked on the door to inquire if anyone needed their shoes fixed. And they said, "Oh, you want to know about our shoes? Well, I'll show you about our shoes." And they started beating him with those very shoes, which he was just asking if he could have the humble job of fixing. How ironic. So there's unlimited incidents like that. Or in Melbourne, Australia, again, there was a temple in St. Kilda many years ago. And there was a tree that was like overhanging right near the temple, and branches spread over it. And Prabhupada said in his last life he was the owner of this building. So now he is very close to that very house which he loved so much, but as a tree, and not even getting the shelter of that house. So was it worth it? Or in Japan, this rich Indian businessman let us stay in his apartment house, and Prabhupada asked for one apartment to use as a temple after Prabhupada finished the program, and the man refused. And when the man left, Prabhupada said, he will become a rat in this house in his next life. So what is the use of living in this house with all your attachment, living with the family members from your previous life, if you are a rat? I can't actually remember if he said a rat or a cockroach or a mouse or something, but it wasn't very nice. So what is the use? What is the use of such sentimentalism? So that is the karma kanda type of mood, unlimited accumulation. That's spoken about more in Niyamagraha at the bottom of page 22. Niyamagraha, accepting some of the scriptural rules. Now here Prabhupada is giving a very clear definition of Niyamagraha. Accepting some of the scriptural rules and regulation for immediate benefit, as utilitarians advocate, is called Niyamagraha, and neglecting the rules and regulations of the Shastra, which are meant for spiritual development, is called Niyamagraha. So, the word agraha, there's agraha and ugraha, but when the niyama is put to it, either way, it sounds Niyamagraha. The sandhi, the combination of the two as make it a, or a and a make it a. So niyamagra either means accepting rules and regulations that are meant for materialistic benefit, what Prabhupada calls utilitarian practical enjoyment in life, karma, kanda, attaining wealth, women, fortune, better birth, like that. So accepting those rules is called niyamagraha, and rejecting those rules that are meant for spiritual advancement is also similarly called niyamagraha. So one should not, again, waste his time trying to over-collect and over-endeavor, working so hard just to accumulate material things that are not, they cannot bring happiness to us, because we are not the body. They cannot bring us happiness. It is impossible. So, on one hand, we shouldn't follow those rules and regulations that are simply meant to bring us material happiness. And on the other hand, we should follow those rules and regulations that are meant for our spiritual, eternal happiness. Happiness based on the platform that we are not our body, but we are spirit souls. And that is called niyamagraha. One should do it the right way. The tendency is to accept the rules and regulations and austerities that bring us material happiness, and to reject the rules and regulations and austerities that bring us spiritual happiness, and to act in that way as niyamagraha. It should be reversed. Next, Prabhupada speaks about lolyam, or greed. So note again how all these things that we have spoken of are meant simply for the living entity, the jiva soul, who is taking shelter and surrendering to the bahiranga shakti of the Lord, or the maya shakti of the Lord, in the mood of I want to enjoy, I want to control, I want to be happy, I want to be perfect, and I want to be powerful. Because without power and Ishwara and Siddha, without these, one cannot enjoy. One cannot be the bhokta, or the enjoyer. So all these things are connected to the attempt of the jiva soul in maya to enjoy, to be the enjoyer and the controller. And therefore, they are hindrances on the path of Krishna consciousness. Lolyam is explained here as desires to expand the mind by perfecting mystic yoga, another siddham, merging the existence of Brahman, or attaining a whimsical material prosperity, are all included within the category of lolya. So that means karma kanda, jnana kanda, and yoga kanda. These are all lolya. Anything, practically speaking, other than finding eternal shelter at the feet of Krishna, is an improper greed that should be given up. And neither of these are these people happy. They're neither peaceful nor happy. Only the devotee, pure devotee, can actually be happy. There is a nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says, Krishna bhakta nishkama ataiva shanta. Because the Krishna bhakti, bhakta devotee, is nishkam, that he has no material desires, therefore he is ateva, he is shant, he is peaceful. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami ateva na sakala ashanta. The one who has material desires for bhukti, mukti, or siddhi, sense enjoyment, liberation, or materialistic perfection, sakali ashanta. He cannot be peaceful. While Krishna bhakti nishkamata eva shanta. So this lolyam does not bring us happiness, nor does it bring us material lolyam, does not bring us closest to the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, that completes section C. Now in section D,
Prabhupada analyzes basically the politics of materialists using the point of capitalism and communism. Now, communism, since Prabhupada written this, has somewhat folded. Communism was or is a very, very interesting philosophy. I watched it for years, and it is an idealistic philosophy. And it is the philosophy of the sudras, or the workers, who are saying, we have the numbers. Why should we allow these vaishyas, these capitalists, to exploit us to gain material prosperity and keep the profit? Rather, since we're the ones actually doing the work, we should be the ones who share the profit, and let's use the strength of our numbers to gain force, and then we will share the profit equally. So in the name of sharing the profit equally and getting rid of the exploitive vaishyas, the state was established as supreme. And the state's job was to manage the economy and then distribute and replace the vaishyas, manage the economy, and then distribute the wealth to everyone, all the workers, equally. That was the basis of the philosophy. But what actually happened is that clever politicians, powerful rulers, would take control and preach very strongly the philosophy, the idealistic philosophy of communism and socialism, and the silly workers would work and not get any profit for it and surrender everything to the state as if the profits were being divided amongst everyone equally, and the leaders, who are actually just like clever kings, would in that way simply live off all the profits. Instead of distributing it equally, they would take all the profits and keep it themselves. And this is actually what happens. And this is actually what happened. And someone was telling me, I think it was Krishna Chetra, who had been in, I think it was Romania, that had one of the heaviest of the communist dictatorships. I can't remember the not only could not remember it, I couldn't pronounce it either, who ended up with a bullet in his head, or probably many bullets in his head. And that man had constructed this, you know, tremendous huge palaces for himself, and the people were so poor, although the country somehow or another wasn't in debt, because I assume they just didn't import anything, and that's easy to stay out of debt like that. But everyone was so poor in this poor, ragged country, and he was living as the most richest, wealthiest, aristocratic king with all his aristocratic followers and family members. In this way, in the name of communism, he was doing an incredibly superb job of exploiting the masses. And this is just what happens. And the people just go along with it because they're being strongly forced by the government. So the modern capitalists accumulate more wealth than necessary, and the communists became envious of the vaishyas' accumulation of wealth, and they wanted to take the money and the wealth. Wealth means Lakshmi. Lakshmi means the power to enjoy. It means the potency, Shakti, to enjoy. So the sudras, with the backing of the intellectuals, they took over. And that was communism, and it was basically due to the envy of capitalism, of the vaishyas. And Prabhupada points out very clearly that Krishna consciousness is the proper use of wealth. The capitalists exploit the workers and use the wealth for their sense gratification. They steal Krishna's property,
his natural resources, which are, they did not create them, they are not theirs, and yet they exploit them and keep the wealth for themselves, and the sudras, workers, become envious of them. Why should they have the opportunity to exploit and keep the wealth for themselves? We should be the ones exploiting and keeping the wealth for ourselves. And therefore the fight went on for almost 100 years, or more than 100 years. And then Prabhupada explains that the real proper way to run a country is based on the Ishopanishad verse, Isavasya idam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bunjita madvidha kasi svidhanam. Now you've all studied carefully the Ishopanishad, so you know the import and meaning of that verse, that everything does not belong. Everything inanimate and inanimate, it doesn't belong to either the capitalist or the communist or the feudalist or the aristocracy or the intellectuals. Everything is owned and controlled by Krishna. He has created it. He is actually controlling it. He is maintaining it. He will destroy it. And therefore, because it is His, it should be used in His service. And when things that belong to someone else are used in my service, even though they belong to someone else, I am a thief and I'm liable to be punished by the law. And the law of God stops everyone who tries to exploit the resources of God. It is inevitable. These laws are stringent. Stringent means strict, unbreakable. They cannot be broken. We exploit for a little while and then we become smashed by the laws of nature. So therefore, a Krishna conscious social order headed by devotees know that the material world, as Prabhupada explains, is designed by the complete arrangement of the Lord to fulfill all the necessities of life for all living beings without having to encroach upon the life or rights of others. This complete arrangement affords the proper quarter of wealth for everyone according to his real needs, and thus everyone may live peacefully according to the principles of plain living and high thinking. Again, vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam atyahara prayasascha ampajalpo niyamagraha. That one must, to live in this world properly, one must focus his mind on what his life is for and what is really to be gained by his existence. One has to focus his mind on that, and therefore he doesn't take or want more than he actually needs. And therefore there is enough to go around. And therefore people aren't greedy, because on one hand they have their mind not focused on consuming, consuming, enjoying, enjoying, and advertisements flashing, new, buy it, try it, take it. And everyone's just getting their senses agitated by the media to enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. So on one hand, that isn't there, because people know the real purpose of life. And on the other hand, because people know the real purpose of life, and because their senses and mind are peaceful, because they're engaging in pious activities, therefore they are peaceful and they are satisfied, and they're using their time properly due to this. So their time is used properly, they're peaceful, and there's enough to go around. And this is the basis of a cooperative society based on Krishna consciousness. Intelligence should be used for Krishna consciousness, not trying to fulfill unlimited desires. And then the conclusion, one gets material and spiritual satisfaction. When human society gives up these elementary faults enumerated by Srila Rupa Goswami, all enmity will cease between men and animals, capitalists and communists, and so forth. It is not, you can be sure, that although the threat of communism. There's the famous saying that Karl Marx wrote in his Communist Manifesto: a spectra is haunting Europe. It is the spectra of communism. So when communism as the great fearful spectre is removed, you can be 100% sure that things will therefore not become peaceful in Europe or anywhere else in the world, because the capitalists will be fighting over who is controlling, and some other form will come of government will come, because it's only competition for sense gratification that's going on. And how can there be peace when everyone is simply competing for sense gratification?
The Krishna consciousness movement offers a spiritual community that can bring about a peaceful condition in the world. Every intelligent man should purify his consciousness and rid himself of the above mentioned six hindrances to devotional service by taking wholehearted shelter of this Krishna consciousness movement. And especially this applies to the devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement, that if we want the movement to afford the real association that takes people away from Janasangha, the devotees themselves have to be free from the improprieties of the first two verses, the hindrances, and we have to become purified so we become that association that people tend to take full shelter.